that researchers of the brain believe that mathematical truths make little sense to our mind, particularly when it comes to the examination of random outcomes. Most results in probability are entirely counterintuitive. We will see plenty of them. Then why argue with a mere journalist whose paycheck comes from playing on the conventional wisdom of the hordes? I recall that every time I have been humiliated in a public discussion on markets by someone of the George Will variety, who seemed to present more palatable and easier to understand arguments, I turned out, much later, to be right. I do not dispute that arguments should be simplified to their maximum potential, but people often confuse complex ideas that cannot be simplified into a media-friendly statement as symptomatic of a confused mind. MBAs learn the concept of clarity and simplicity, the five-minute manager take on things. The concept may apply to the business plan for a fertilizer plant, but not to highly probabilistic arguments, which is the reason I have anecdotal evidence in my business that MBAs tend to blow up in financial markets as they are trained to simplify matters a couple of steps beyond their requirement. I beg the MBA reader not to take offense. I am myself the unhappy holder of the degree. A different kind of earthquake. Try the following experiment. Go to the airport and ask travelers en route to some remote destination how much they would pay for an insurance policy paying, say, 1 million tugrits, the currency of Mongolia, if they died during the trip for any reason. Then ask another collection of travelers how much they would pay for insurance that pays the same in the event of death from a terrorist act, and only a terrorist act. Guess which one would command a higher price. Odds are that people would rather pay for the second policy, although the former includes death from terrorism. The psychologists, Daniel Kahneman and Amos Tversky, figured this out decades ago. The irony is that one of the sampled populations did not include people on the street, but professional predictors attending some Society of Forecasters annual meeting. In a now famous experiment, they found that the majority of people, whether predictors or non-predictors, will judge a deadly flood causing thousands of deaths, caused by a California earthquake, to be more likely than a fatal flood causing thousands of deaths, occurring somewhere in North America, which happens to include California. As a derivatives trader, I notice that people do not like to insure against something abstract. The risk that merits their attention is always something vivid. This brings us to a more dangerous dimension of journalism. We just saw how the scientifically hideous George Will and his colleagues can twist arguments to sound right without being right. But there is a more general impact by information providers in biasing the representation of the world one gets from the delivered information. It is a fact that our brain tends to go for superficial clues when it comes to risk and probability, these clues being largely determined by what emotions they elicit, or the ease with which they come to mind. In addition to such problems with the perception of risk, it is also a scientific fact, and a shocking one, that both risk detection and risk avoidance are not mediated in the thinking part of the brain, but largely in the emotional one, the risk-as-feelings theory. The consequences are not trivial. It means that rational thinking has little, very little, to do with risk avoidance. Much of what rational thinking seems to do is rationalize one's actions by fitting some logic to them. In that sense, the description coming from journalism is certainly not just an unrealistic representation of the world, but rather the one that can fool you the most by grabbing your attention via your emotional apparatus, the cheapest to deliver sensation. Take the mad cow threat, for example. Over a decade of hype, it only killed people, in the highest estimates, in the hundreds, as compared to car accidents, several hundred thousands. Except that the journalistic description of the latter would not be commercially fruitful. Note that the risk of dying from food poisoning or in a car accident on the way to a restaurant is greater than dying from mad cow disease. This sensationalism can divert empathy toward wrong causes, cancer and malnutrition being the ones that suffer the most from the lack of such attention. Malnutrition in Africa and Southeast Asia no longer causes the emotional impact, so it literally dropped out of the picture. In that sense, the mental probabilistic map in one's mind is so geared toward the sensational that one would realize informational gains by dispensing with the news. Another example concerns the volatility of markets. In people's minds, lower prices are far more volatile than sharply higher moves. In addition, volatility seems to be determined not by the actual moves, but by the tone of the media. The market movements in the 18 months after September 11, 2001, were far smaller than the ones that we faced in the 18 months prior. But somehow in the mind of investors, they were very volatile. The discussions in the media of the terrorist threats magnified the effect of these market moves in people's heads. This is one of the many reasons that journalism may be the greatest plague we face today. As the world becomes more and more complicated, our minds are trained for more and more simplification. Proverbs galore. Beware the confusion between correctness and intelligibility. Part of conventional wisdom favors things that can be explained rather instantly and in a nutshell. In many circles, it is considered law. Having attended a French elementary school, a lycée primaire, I was trained to rehash Boileau's adage, "What is easy to conceive is clear to express. Words to say it would come effortless." The reader can imagine my disappointment at realizing, while growing up as a practitioner of randomness, that most poetic-sounding adages are plain wrong. Borrowed wisdom can be vicious. I need to make a huge effort not to be swayed by well-sounding remarks. I remind myself of Einstein's remark that common sense is nothing but a collection of misconceptions acquired by age 18. Furthermore, what sounds intelligent in a conversation or a meeting, or particularly in the media, is suspicious. Any reading of the history of science would show that almost all the smart things that have been proven by science appeared like lunacies at the time they were first discovered. Try to explain to a Times of London journalist in 1905 that time slows down when one travels. Even the Nobel Committee never granted Einstein the prize on account of his insight on special relativity. Or to someone with no exposure to physics that there are places in our universe where time does not exist. Try to explain to Kenny that, although his star trader proved to be extremely successful, I have enough arguments to convince him that he is a dangerous idiot. Risk managers. Corporations and financial institutions have recently created the strange position of risk manager, someone who is supposed to monitor the institution and verify that it is not too deeply involved in the business of playing Russian roulette. Clearly, having been burned a few times, the incentive is there to have someone take a look at the generator, the roulette that produces the profits and losses. Although it is more fun to trade, many extremely smart people among my friends, including Jean Patrice, felt attracted by such positions. It is an important and attractive fact that the average risk manager earns more than the average trader, particularly when we take into account the number of traders thrown out of the business. While a 10-year survival rate for a trader is in the single digits, that of a risk manager is close to 100%. Traders come and go. Risk managers are here to stay. I keep thinking of taking such a position both on economic grounds, as it is probabilistically more profitable, and because the job offers more intellectual content than the one consisting in just buying and selling, and allows one to integrate research and execution. Finally, a risk manager's blood has smaller quantities of the harmful kind of stress hormones, But something has held me back, aside from the irrationality of wanting the pains and entertainment from the emotions of speculation. The risk manager's job feels strange. As we said, the generator of reality is not observable. They are limited in their power to stop profitable traders from taking risks, given that they would, ex post, be accused by the George Wills around of costing the shareholder some precious opportunity shekels. On the other hand, the occurrence of a blow-up would cause them to be responsible for it. What to do in such circumstances? Their focus becomes to play politics, cover themselves by issuing vaguely phrased internal memoranda that warn against risk-taking activities, yet stop short of completely condemning it, lest they lose their job. Like a doctor torn between the two types of errors, the false positive, telling the patient that he has cancer when in fact he does not, and the false negative, telling the patient he is healthy when in fact he has cancer, they need to balance their existence with the fact that they inherently need some margin of error in their business. Epiphenomena. From the standpoint of an institution, the existence of a risk manager has less to do with actual risk reduction than it has to do with the impression of risk reduction. Philosophers since Hume and modern psychologists have been studying the concept of epiphenomenalism, or when one has the illusion of cause and effect. Does the compass move the boat? By watching your risks, are you effectively reducing them, or are you giving yourself the feeling that you are doing your duty? Are you like a chief executive officer, or just an observing press officer? Is such illusion of control harmful? I conclude the chapter with a presentation of the central paradox of my career in financial randomness. By definition, I go against the grain, so it should come as no surprise that my style and methods are neither popular nor easy to understand. But I have a dilemma. On the one hand, I work with others in the real world, and the real world is not just populated with babbling but ultimately inconsequential journalists. So my wish is for people in general to remain fools of randomness, so I can trade against them. Yet for there to remain a minority intelligent enough to value my methods and hire my services. In other words, I need people to remain fools of randomness, but not all of them. I was fortunate to meet Donald Sussman, who corresponds to such an ideal partner. He helped me in the second stage of my career by freeing me from the ills of employment. My greatest risk is to become successful, as it would mean that my business is about to disappear. Strange business hours. Chapter 3. A Mathematical Meditation on History. On Monte Carlo simulation as a metaphor for understanding a sequence of random historical events. On randomness and artificial history. Age is beauty, almost always, and the new and the young are generally toxic. Send your history professor to an introductory class on sampling theory. Euro Playboy Mathematics. The stereotype of a pure mathematician presents an anemic man with a shaggy beard and grimy and uncut fingernails, silently laboring on a Spartan but disorganized desk. With thin shoulders and a pot belly, he sits in a grubby office, totally absorbed in his work, oblivious to the grunginess of his surroundings. He grew up in a communist regime and speaks English with an astringent and throaty Eastern European accent. When he eats, crumbs of food accumulate in his beard. With time, he becomes more and more absorbed in his subject matter of pure theorems, reaching levels of ever-increasing abstraction. The American public was recently exposed to one of these characters with the Unabomber, the bearded and recluse mathematician who lived in a hut and took to murdering people who promoted modern technology. No journalist was capable of even coming close to describing the subject matter of his thesis, Complex Boundaries, as it has no intelligible equivalent. A complex number being an entirely abstract and imaginary number that includes the square root of -1, an object that has no analog outside of the world of mathematics. The name Monte Carlo conjures up the image of a suntanned, urbane man of the Euro Playboy variety entering a casino under a whiff of the Mediterranean breeze. He is an apt skier and tennis player, but also can hold his own in chess and bridge. He drives a gray sports car, dresses in a well-ironed Italian handmade suit, and speaks carefully and smoothly about mundane but real matters, those a journalist can easily describe to the public in compact sentences. Inside the casino, he astutely counts the cards, mastering the odds, and bets in a studied manner, his mind producing precise calculations of his optimal betting size. He could be James Bond's smarter lost brother. Now, when I think of Monte Carlo mathematics, I think of a happy combination of the two. The Monte Carlo man's realism, without the shallowness, combined with the mathematician's intuitions, without the excessive abstraction. For indeed, this branch of mathematics is of immense practical use. It does not present the same dryness commonly associated with mathematics. I became addicted to it the minute I became a trader. It shaped my thinking in most matters related to randomness. Most of the examples used in this book were created with my Monte Carlo generator, which I introduce in this chapter. Yet it is far more a way of thinking than a computational method. Mathematics is principally a tool to meditate, rather than to compute. The tools. The notion of alternative histories discussed in the last chapter can be extended considerably and subjected to all manner of technical refinement. This brings us to the tools used in my profession to toy with uncertainty. I will outline them next. Monte Carlo methods, in brief, consist of creating artificial history using the following concepts. First, consider the sample path. The invisible histories have a scientific name, alternative sample paths, a name borrowed from the field of mathematics of probability called stochastic processes. The notion of path, as opposed to outcome, indicates that it is not a mere MBA-style scenario analysis, but the examination of a sequence of scenarios along the course of time. We are not just concerned with where a bird can end up tomorrow night, but rather with all the various places it can possibly visit during the time interval. We are not concerned with what the investor's worth would be in, say, a year, but rather of the heart-wrenching rides he may experience during that period. The word sample stresses that one sees only one realization among a collection of possible ones. Now, a sample path can be either deterministic or random, which brings the next distinction. A random sample path, also called a random run, is the mathematical name for such a succession of virtual historical events, starting at a given date and ending at another, except that they are subjected to some varying level of uncertainty. However, the word random should not be mistaken for equiprobable, i.e., having the same probability. Some outcomes will give a higher probability than others. An example of a random sample path can be the body temperature of your explorer cousin during his latest bout with typhoid fever, measured hourly from the beginning to the end of his episode. It can also be a simulation of the price of your favorite technology stock, measured daily at the close of the market over, say, 1 year. Starting at $100, in one scenario, it can end up at $20, having seen a high of $220. In another, it can end up at $145, having seen a low of $10. Another example is the evolution of your wealth during an evening at a casino. You start with $1,000 in your pocket and measure it every 15 minutes. In one sample path, you have $2,200 at midnight. In another, you barely have $20 left for a cab fare. Stochastic processes refer to the dynamics of events unfolding with the course of time. Stochastic is a fancy Greek name for random. This branch of probability concerns itself with the study of the evolution of successive random events. One could call it the mathematics of history. The key about a process